Do we just jump in?
Okay, we just jump in. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming for our session. We'll be talking about the power to the public stack governing Europe's digital commons, specifically talking about the newly established digital commons edict. I don't need to go over, I think, what will be repeated many times in this room, but we know that digital sovereignty is on the cards. There's a lot of political momentum around it, and we think that open source, but specifically digital commons, are the way forward. So I'll talk briefly about the work that we do and then like pass it on to Leah and Emma, and then we get into the edict. But I wanted to kind of set some context around where we think the edict can play some important roles for the ecosystem. So the work that we do at Open Future, and as partly and supported by the NGI Commons Consortium, we think of digital commons as the way forward. Digital commons in the sense, not just the technical artifacts and the licensing around open source, but the communities and the practices of commoning that sustain these infrastructures. So we want to put forward a progressive vision, both of digital sovereignty, not based on regionalistic or nationalistic interpretations, but also a progressive vision of the commons. And I think enough people in this room will recognize that open source is the way forward in terms of a more resilient form of sovereignty. So that's why we advocate for this framing of the digital commons, not just as a way to move away from a dependence on American technologies, but moving away entirely from proprietary and extractive ecosystems. So as part of this work, we've been, Jordan, if I can just one back. As part of this work, we're looking at a few different ideas and a few different sort of policy interventions, the edict being one of them, but we're also looking broadly at how we build, how we fund, and how we govern technologies. And so this looks like aligning the broader research and innovation funding architectures that we have to the sort of the dynamics and the realities of the digital commons. So this also looks like funding critical infrastructures, funding commons that underlie critical infrastructures, but also looking at the choices that are made upstream that shape technology trajectories downstream across the European Union and how public funding is channeled towards funding research and innovation. We're also looking at procurement as a way to channelize investment strategically towards open source and digital commons, but also thinking about that as a market-shaping tool and as a way, as someone in the previous panel also said, to make sure that procurement practices also make sure that the ecosystem itself remains sustainable and that we don't have extractive forms of procurement from open source and the commons. So, and as part of these interventions, we're also looking at cloud and social media because we recognize that these are all elements that are important vectors for threats to sovereignty. And finally, I think moving on to the digital commons edict, and this is where I will pass on to, I think, Leah first. Where we think that, where we want to discuss how the role that the digital commons edict can play in terms of its stewardship of the community and support for the open source ecosystem. So our interventions today, I think, are primarily about sort of opening up the floor towards questions from the community and understanding how this architecture can kind of interface with all of the stakeholders that have an interest in it. So with that, I'll pass on to Leah.
Thank you, Adi. Let's see if we can turn this into a kind of mic we can pass around. Yeah, I like that. Okay, hi everyone. I'm Leah Bayermann. Thanks for the kind introduction, Aditya. I'm from Zendes, from the German Center for Digital Sovereignty. To those of you who don't know us, we are a state-owned company. We are kind of associated with the German Digital Ministry, and our main mission is to make sure that the public sector is less dependent on individual IT providers. There was a study conducted a few years ago that showed that the German public sector, but not only the German, I suppose, is very dependent on just a few IT providers. And this is very risky, of course, so we were set up as an entity to do something about that. We offer open source solutions, alternative solutions to the public sector, but we also take care of securing software supply chains, for example. You could have a look at open code for that. So that's what we do, and from the very beginning, it was very clear to us that what we do, it doesn't stop at the borders of Germany. The problems we are dealing with they go beyond Germany. We need to look to Europe and cooperate with other European countries to really achieve our mission. So in 2024, we started collaborating with France, with DINIM, MRC from DINIM. So we go way back, 2 years back. So we started collaborating in 2024, and then a little later, the Netherlands joined, the Netherlands Ministry of the Interior joined, and we had this three-way collaboration, and we've been doing mostly what we call 100-day challenges. So we collaborate on several projects ranging from AI and video conferencing to all sorts of things, really. Also collaborating on how we want to collaborate. So we also published guidelines, for example, on how to do that. We worked together on Docs, which is quite well known, I think, a note-taking application to integrate in our various workspace solutions. So we've been doing a lot of good things. But also, I think we noticed that we'd like to scale, we'd like to involve more partners in our collaboration. And the question is, how can we do that? Because we also noticed that it really takes work to work together, a lot of effort, and money and resources and people. Our hope really for this EDIC is that it can make this collaboration easier, it can help us scale. I think of it as a kind of tent that we can put up to give us shelter, to give us funding and people, and maybe also a strategy and some common ground rules for collaborating. And then from there we have, or in the kind of tent, we have the safe space to collaborate and involve more partners. We've been involved in the EDIC as a kind of project partner of the Digital Ministry to help implement these projects. That's my little vision for the EDIC, and I'll pass it on to Emma with that.
Thank you, Leah. Hello, everyone. So there is no my picture on the slides, so just a short introduction to heal my ego today. So I'm in charge of the French OSPO, which is located at DINUM in France. We are having lots of activities in this OSPO, which I will be really happy to talk to you about in another discussion. And I'm in charge with the cabinet of our director to follow this topic, which is about the EDIC. And I had the pleasure to work on the topic starting like about 24 months ago, which is not so long, because I don't know if there are some people who in the room participated in the very early days of the EDIC construction. At this time, it was a foundation for digital commons. It was during the French presidency of the EU back in 2022. And there were lots of consultations with the actors to ask to the communities exactly what you said. I mean, you said we need collaboration as member states, but communities need also to express what they need, so that the EDIC can be also constructed with what they think is important. So there were lots of talking. A few years later, work actually accelerated a lot, because we had a little issue. We started understanding that among wider policymaker circle about our digital sovereignty, because the political context changed, and we thought, maybe we need to regain some digital sovereignty our public stack. And what we believe with Zendis and with other EDIC, DC EDIC partners, is that sovereignty should be open. Sovereignty is not something that you restrain to the borders of France, to the borders of Europe. It should not be closed, it should be open to communities and open with open source. And this is basically the history behind the Digital Commons EDIC. So what is the EDIC is about? It's about regaining digital sovereignty with the help of digital commons. We will probably not reach open digital sovereignty if we do not have a strong digital commons ecosystem. And so very concretely, the edict was designed to address two things. The first is to strengthen the work on supply, what we call supply. So let's think it's all of a market to simplify things. So you have supply of digital commons. And behind that, this is code, this is people, very important. And the edict will be providing guidance, expertise, funding, expertise which can be legal, which can be, as many kinds of expertise as this is needed to really strengthen these digital commons projects. But it's good to have supply, right? It's good to reinforce the capacity of people to develop good projects. It's also very important to work on demand because in my opinion, we really need to work on demand. Who is demanding digital commons now? It's so much easier to just buy as an enterprise or as a government a solution that's proprietary. And it's safe, not as much right now, and people are starting to realize it. But we need to also work to really advocate among with lots of people who are doing it here. I know in the room, partners, I know the Open Forum Europe is doing that, Zendesk is doing that, many people, but we need also to coordinate that and to really keep doing this so that we can also shape the capacity of public agents in the administration of people and enterprises to really realize that this is important to also use digital commons tools. And the edict can be a tool, will be a tool to coordinate also this energy that many people are already doing in several organizations to work on this. So this is basically work on demand, work on supply, and develop programs and activities with communities, with member states to do that. So the edict is basically a tool for member states, for members of the DC edict, which can only be member states, as we will see just later. But it's also a home for projects and a home for digital commons. And this is how it was built from the very beginning, and this is, we hope, how it will continue to be built in the future. So we can switch to the statuses because I want to leave some room for comments. So I hope you know. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So this drawing was actually made by a diplomat. So please forgive it. Give us mercy for this, right? I know it's very bad and we will probably work to improve it. But yeah, you know, diplomats are not so good at drawing. So what's important here is the information that is on the screen and that I will try to also explain a little what's behind all these words. So this is the edict's governance seen by a diplomat who gave so much to the project, so I don't want to burden him too much. So you can see here that it's the first time actually that we disclose this information. How does it work? Because it was unbelievable for us now that the edict has been created back in November not to talk at FOSDEM about this because, technical communities of FOSDEM are, I guess, eager to know more about how this will function. So this is kind of the writing of this will be the rules of how it works, and then I guess the functioning will probably evolve when it's actually operational. So what's important to understand is that the main body of the edict is the assembly of members. So who can be member? Member states, and only member states. I'm sorry to tell you this. And right now there are four member states which are members, five member states which are members, so France, Italy, Netherlands, Germany, and Luxembourg, which joined recently. And we're really happy of this. And we have another category of persons who participate in what could be seen as an administration council. So I don't know if you are involved in NGOs, in enterprises. You have administration council. So basically, assembly of members, is the governing supreme body of the edict. It also can welcome observers. So right now we have observers which are mainly member states. So there is, and there I will need your help, Leah. There is Poland, there is Slovenia, there is, I should have noted that. Maybe someone knows in the room. But we have like some member states which are observers. Pardon, my memory is really bad as I didn't sleep so much over the past days. And please forgive us if you are a member state observer and not cited. You also can have municipalities. So let's say city of Barcelona may want to join as an observer. You can have regions. So let's say Schleswig-Holstein in Germany could join as an observer. This is a possibility that is opened by the status, and obviously also the European Commission is an observer. So basically when you are an observer, you can observe, meaning you can give your opinion, you can participate to activities, you can attend these administration councils meetings, but you cannot vote. And that's it. And in exchange, you don't pay anything, you just observe. So this is the main body, which will actually be really, it's now really an important body, because it's, the Assembly of Members is in charge of setting up the EDIC activities, hiring the director, etc. So now, second thing is, there is an advisory board. So the advisory board provides expertise and guidance to the member states. Assembly. So if I quote the status, this is an equitable distribution of stakeholders whose expertise in the field is relevant to digital commons edict. So it may be obviously people from the community. Okay, and there will be a process that will be set up to select these experts, which will be nominated for 2 years to advise the Assembly of Members. And finally, there are ad hoc committees. So this is a working group, so I will not take too much time to speak about it. They can be set up if there is a need to design a program, there is a need to design a text, if there is a need to organize an event. It's very basically a working group, and it can be mixed with people from the communities and people who are institutional. Stakeholders. So these are the main, let's say, EDIC governance structures. So I hope this is a bit clearer. Actually, it's quite classic. And there is another one thing which is super important, and it's in the statutes, although it's not a governance body, it's the DSIC EDIC community network. So the fact that it is in the statutes shows that there will probably be no strong EDIC without a strong community. And this is what it means to have a DC community network in the statutes. And the EDIC will be in charge of working to ally with the community networks that work on digital commons, that develop digital and maintain digital commons, to organize events, organize activities, participate to it. Because, I mean, the EDIC is working at the EU scale, and if we want to achieve a greater impact, so really try to help the European Union, member states, municipalities, etc., regain digital sovereignty with the help of digital commons, then we really need the community to do it and to spread all over Europe to participate and conduct activities. So this is also something. So the DC community network, so it's written events held on a regular basis. I don't think it should be only events. We will see, it's not in the statutes, this word events. So I guess it will be a little larger than just events. But this was a very quick introduction, and I think necessary introduction also to be transparent with the committee with what's happening now at the EU level on the Digital Commons EDIC to inform you about this. And we welcome with Leah and Aditya questions. Thank you. So I choose who I can choose. So maybe we can do a rule which is one woman, one man. So ladies, also you can raise your hands. I spoke a lot this morning for
president. Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question, so I need to have some time to think about it. But let me try. Well, I mean, we have this mechanism of, you know, becoming observer first, and I think this is, I mean, first step you can take. So I would recommend doing that. It's free of charge, if you will, so you can do that. And then, well, I think personally my advice would be to give us some time to actually to set up the EDA. I mean, it's been launched, but we're still waiting, you know, for the first employees, for projects to kick off and things like that. And I think from there we can gain more momentum and really show that it's worth joining the EDIC. And if you are observer by then already, then and attending meetings and events, and there will be more of that, then I hope it can be very convincing to join us as a full member. I think that's all I can say. And you could, I mean, we've been working together with France, with the Netherlands, the Ministry of the Interior, and we've had these challenges, built stuff, and I think that's been very, very convincing, I hope.
Yeah, if I may, we should ask Luxembourg, because they just joined the EDIC, and I'm sure they have good reasons for this. I fully agree with you. Once there will be activities launched, community activities, funding activities, supporting activities, then I guess it will also make more sense, because if you are the government of Poland and you have, I mean, you have such a strong open source ecosystem in Poland, you now have a strategy, you now have people in the government, I know, who support the strategy at a high level, which is really amazing. Then if you have the addition of the right people plus interesting activities, I guess it can be a help. But my personal opinion is also that we need people in the countries, open source and digital commons communities in the countries, to take part to this discussion through EVEN, to also ask their policymakers and their political decision makers to make a move. And let's be honest, the context is helping now, which is great. I mean, we have an opportunity because planets are aligned.
Okay, we think this work is, does seem to work.
Splendid. Dirk van Gulik, Apache Software Foundation. So a lot of the things this edict and also digital commons or the digital commons are trying to address, I think, are issues of governance, of policy, of industrial policy, of sovereignty, of all sort of things industry and society needs to fix. They're not technical issues at all. I mean, we've got the technology and everything else. We're here now in a room with lots of engineers. I mean, we write code, we fix things. What is it that you're really sort of like expecting from us? Like, what is expected, basically? Because these problems sound very non-technical to me.
If I take Mastodon, so we know we have a problem of cognitive influence by US platforms that are, or Chinese platforms that are social networks, on our youth and our population. So we need sovereign, open, community alternatives to this. And the DCE does not build this. You build it. And you build it greatly. And probably that you need some help from policymakers to build it better. If I take an example, seen from the government, one problem that we are having with that kind of platform is user experience. I know it's not a 100% engineer thing, but I mean it's the second problem is moderation. So I think that engineers should also, we will succeed if there are a diversity of persons working on digital commons, on a stream that goes from policymakers to UX designers, and in between people who are up for moderation, translation, etc. So I emphasize a little on this, but I mean there are very good American or Chinese products or whatever private products, proprietary products that are so good because there are diverse people working on it. So this would be my answer. Not really an answer, but I would expect you to work more widely with a diversity of experts and stakeholders, hopefully with our help.
Yeah, maybe I can just quickly add to that, because I realize that what we've been talking about sounds very policy oriented and high level at times, but going back to those 100-day challenges, where we actually built products and built software during these challenges, and we did that together with the Blocknode people, for example. So we've been working on docs together. So, we are building technology. We need engineers to do that and to really help us with that. So we need all of you.
If you believe you're underrepresented and you have a question, please raise your hand. and we have somebody. Yes?
Yes, we'll go up there.
Thank you. I am not underrepresented. I'm just a male. I might sound a little bit harsh with my series of questions, but allow me to make a few questions instead of just one. Looking at this graph, I see that a lot of these advisory boards are observers with no participation, no say in it. The assembly of members is basically just member states, so by implicity, it's governments. And these governments are being re-elected every single 4 years, 5 years, and they are subject to change of vision, also in case of censorship and what is being allowed into the public thinking. We see the examples perfectly overseas. We might have just nearly missed that chance in France with Marine Le Pen and so on. It's a little bit convoluted. Please allow me a little bit to track it all. So my question to you is, how do other non-governmental entities have a certain power and means of directing this edict? I'm lacking the participation of, for example, NGOs, government independent entities like UNICEF and Human Rights Initiative and the EFF. And also, lastly, it looks a lot like the community network and the ad hoc boards and events, the ones that actually do the work, have to do all the work and no participation in it. So how are you going to solve that?
Well, I just wanted to address the change in government and how that can be difficult first, because I think what we've seen is that it can also be quite an advantage that because we have different election cycles, and then sometimes one government needs to be convinced again, after a re-election, when you have a new government, then you maybe need to convince them that this is worth doing. But then during that time, the other partners can carry on projects. So this has been really, really helpful. But about, including other actors and not just governments, I think there will be a lot more happening in that space in the middle, as Emma mentioned, and not just events, but we will establish mechanisms for feedback also.
Thank you for your question, because this is exactly the kind of feedback that we love to have, so thanks. One thing I would add to what Leah said is that it's a tool from member states to coordinate public policies at the European level to support digital commons. And I mean, let's not hide, the statuses have been built in this direction. And it will probably remain so, but as you can see also, we will conduct the work with the communities in a way that it's an open house for digital commons, an open home for digital commons. So I think that, there are already many community foundations where the communities can participate in a very different way. And the positioning of this edict is slightly different in this sense. So I will not tell you it's a tool designed by communities for communities. No, it's been designed by member states with the help of communities to serve the purpose of supporting digital sovereignty with the lever of digital commons in the EU to regain our digital sovereignty. So this is also why we wanted to have this talk. It was to make that clear, but we will for sure make all the improvements that you mentioned, Leah, and it's super important that we can really have a place to cooperate. And we're late, so yeah. Thank you for all your questions, and you can come to Leah, Aditya, and me for further discussions. We really would be happy to have them. Thank you.
Thank you very much to our speakers.